Good morning. It's good to see everyone out this morning. We welcome those joining us on Facebook. I watched about, I don't know, Jared, 12 hours of basketball over the last 3 days, two games were people I didn't have anything to do with. I didn't know anybody. But what I really found was even when I don't have a dog in the fight, I just don't like referees. I don't like them at all. Again, it's good to see it. Well, I'll tell you what else I don't like is seats without a back. And Concord does have some seats with backs. But when you're as big as I am, it kind of feels like you're sitting on somebody's lap and they're hugging you. And I don't like that. So I sit without the seat backs. And then I'm kind of old now. And so I got up to go to the concession stand and realized, like, I wasn't standing straight up. It was more of this. And it took me about 10 feet before I could finally do this. So, I mean, you all have seen me. You know I don't have good posture, but, man, it hurts when it slaps you right in the face. I read a story of a man and his brother walking into a bar. The man had been an alcoholic for several years, and he had finally gotten sober, and he had been so for about a year. And he wanted to show his brother that he had learned and that he had learned from his mistakes. And so he goes in. And he sits down and he pulls out a little Altoids tin and sets it on the table and then asks the bartender for a glass of water and a glass of alcohol. And from that tin, he takes two live worms and he puts one in the glass of water and he puts one in the glass with alcohol. And after a few minutes, the worm in the water is still kind of squirming around while the worm in the alcohol is dead and motionless. The man looks at his brother and he says, "Do you see that?" And his brother said, "Yes." And he said, "Do you get the point?" His brother said, "Yes, I do." And the man says, "Well, I want to just make sure. So what is the point?" And the man said, "Well, I think it's pretty clear that you won't have worms if you drink a lot of alcohol." Well, that brother may have missed the point. So sometimes we miss the point, too, when it comes to this time of year. Do we really understand what it means for God to become human, that he came and dwelt among us, or do we miss the point? Last week we talked about burying or missing the headline, that we can't really afford to miss the point when it comes to Emmanuel, God to be with us. To go back to that birth account in John's gospel, we talked last week how John doesn't go back to the manger scene. He takes us all the way back to before creation. You'll notice, let's read the first little bit here of John chapter 1. It says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light, that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light. The true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God." Verse 14, "And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. John bore witness about him and cried out, 'This was he of whom I said, he who comes after me ranks before me, because he was before me.' For from his fullness we have received grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God. The only God who is at the Father's side, he has made him known." John opens up his gospel by telling us that Jesus is eternal. He was there at the beginning. He was there prior to the beginning. That Jesus has no beginning. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Even someone with just a cursory knowledge of the Bible can tell that this echoes the words of Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, right? Whatever else John is going to tell us in this gospel, He wants us to know that this is a continuation of that story. That this is a book about the Creator getting involved with the creation that he loves. This is the climax of the entire redemption story. The highlight of Genesis chapter 1 is the creation of human beings in the image of God. The highlight of John 1 is God becoming human. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. However, Jesus wasn't born. And I think we can write that down, that Jesus was not born. I think the headline here is not that Jesus was born. Isaiah makes reference to this 700 years prior. And the headline there was that a child was to be born, a son will be given to us. The child was to be born, but a son was given. It's important. The son existed before this child was born. The virgin gave birth to a child, but the child existed before the virgin ever got pregnant, before the virgin ever existed. That's an important point to remember when it comes to this story. The son was given and not born. It is true that God chose to come into this world through a virgin woman, to be laid as a baby in the manger in Bethlehem. However, the event, the birth does not signify the beginning of Jesus. The Creator chose to be created. But here's another story, part of the story to take hold of. That manger, we know, held more than the baby. That manger held the peace with which Jesus would calm the storm. That manger held the power to turn 5 loaves and 2 fish into enough food to feed 5,000. That manger held new eyes for the blind to see and new legs for the lame to walk. It held living water so the Samaritan woman at the well wouldn't have to keep coming back to the same well. It held the Beatitudes. It held the tears that Jesus would cry for Jerusalem. It held Lazarus's new life, the cross, the empty tomb. It contained all of those things and so much more. The birth of Jesus, as we said last week, is one of the two most significant events in the history of our world. The other being the resurrection of Jesus. Jesus' birth is BC and AD, right? BCE and whatever we're calling the common era, CE, I guess is what we say now. It shows that God is faithful, that he keeps his promises, that God will do what he says he will, that God said to Abraham, you're going to be the father of many nations, that all nations will be blessed through Abraham. And through that seed, Jesus Christ comes, a descendant of Abraham, through whom all nations of the earth are being blessed. Israel waited. They waited and they waited for a king over a kingdom throughout through the line of David. Who would come and rule over this kingdom? Jesus is that long-awaited king. The Jews waited for the coming Messiah. He meant everything to them. Certainly, that Messiah means everything to us because the birth of Jesus was the birth of hope. Jesus' birth came with an announcement that God was faithful. He always keeps his promises. But not only is God faithful, God is not distant. God didn't design us and then sit back and spectate us. He's not some aloof, faceless creator who just left us on our own to fend for ourselves. No, he came up and took residence with us. He saw with our eyes. He heard things with our ears. He felt the things we feel. He hungered and thirsted. He bled and died. It's sort of like if the president decided he wanted to become a mouse because he loves mice. He wants to get involved with mice. He wants to know how they live. He wants to rescue them. So that's what he does. He becomes a mouse and he leaves the high position of respect and honor and becomes a lowly mouse. And he tries to warn all the mice that in the kitchens are all these mouse traps and you have to avoid the tempting smell of cheese. He tries to save them by becoming one of them. And that's probably a pretty poor analogy, but you get where I'm coming from. That's what Jesus did. He left the lofty to be with the lowly. He left the comforts of heaven to become one of us to save us. Why? Because he loves us. God became one of us. God becoming man and dwelling among us has ramifications far farther than we can keep by our common view of Christmas. One of the members of the Godhead emptied himself, as Paul puts it in Philippians 2:7. You think about that. Jesus surrendered his deity. He gave himself up. He emptied himself. He put on flesh. He gave up his omnipresence. He also gave up his omnipotence while in the flesh. He got tired and hungry. He cried. He hurt. And Paul says that not only did he empty himself, but he took on the form of a servant. Jesus left the lofty to do the lowly. He got dirty as he washed people's feet. And we are to be no different. Being a disciple means that you are going to get dirty. Somebody quipped that Mary had a little lamb, and that lamb would die for her sins and for the entire world's sins. In that manger, on that fateful day in Bethlehem, lay not just a baby, but the God of heaven, who came to dwell on this earth with the very people that he created. What often gets lost during this time of year is not only was that baby born, but that baby was also born to die. From the very beginning, his fate was sealed. A problem that was so complex that we were utterly incapable of solving ourselves, Jesus came to fix that problem being sin. God finally said, you know what? I'll just go down there and take care of it myself. Look at it this way. Let's say we all gathered up together and we went to California and decided we were going to swim to Hawaii. That's the goal. Swim from California to Hawaii. I think I'm a pretty good swimmer. Some of you all might be a better swimmer than I. You might can swim faster. You might be able to swim farther. But you aren't getting to Hawaii. And I'm not either. It doesn't matter. We're all going to end up, literally, in the same boat eventually anyway. It doesn't matter how good of a swimmer you are. You're not making it to Hawaii. It doesn't matter if you're better than everybody else. You aren't swimming that far. So let's say we all got a handful of rocks and went out into the parking lot and just seen which one of us from Concord could hit the North Pole. Your arm might be stronger than mine. You might be able to throw farther than I can, but that doesn't matter. You aren't hitting the North Pole, and neither am I. Well, at the end of the day, we all end up in the same boat. Your pile of sins might be higher of mine. My list of transgressions may far surpass yours. It doesn't matter. We're all in the same boat. Without a rescuer, we are all in the same position. None of us are getting out of this place alive, and we are going to spend an eternity somewhere. Without a deliverer, we are nothing. We need a holy God, a holy Savior to connect us. An unholy people connecting with a holy Savior. There's a story of a man who wanted to get his dad the perfect Christmas gift, and he searched and searched, and he finally came across an ad on the internet for a bird that could speak five languages, stand on one leg, and sing the Yellow Rose of Texas. And the man thought, that's perfect. He had it shipped to his dad, and he waited about 3 days, and he called his dad and asked if he got the gift. And his dad said, I sure did. And his son, how did you like it? And his dad said, it was delicious. Well, that dad missed the point, right? It wasn't supposed to be eight. Again, do we miss the point? Do we understand Emmanuel, God with us, that the long-awaited Messiah coming to rescue us from sin and death, just as the law and the prophets said they would? Someone told us if our greatest need was financial, that God would have sent economist. I'll try that again. If our greatest need was education, he would have sent a teacher. If our greatest need was pleasure, God would have sent an entertainer. But our greatest need was hope. Over sin and death, we needed a cure, so God sent a Savior. Mary had that little lamb so you and I could have the biggest hope. You know, in department stores, Walmart, Target, all over America this time of year, that there are displays of Christmas trees that are flocked with snow and ornaments hanging with lights on it and wrapped around them. Underneath the skirt is the skirt there, and on top of the skirt are these beautifully wrapped Christmas presents with paper and bows. And that same scene is probably mirrored in your home as well. Most of us have a Christmas tree up that has ornaments and lights, maybe has a few presents under it by now, but you know the difference between the scene at your home And the scene at those stores is those presents under the tree at Walmart are empty. They're wrapped really pretty, but by all appearances, they are beautiful, but there's nothing inside of those boxes. But at your house, it's different. The gifts under that tree have meaning and value. And sometimes I wonder if the world doesn't miss the point. In all of our commercialization and all of our focusing on other things, not bad things, just other things, but I wonder sometimes if the story doesn't lose its value. Sort of wonder if maybe this time of year it's not as meaningful. It's almost void of meaning. I said last week that my view of holidays is that we should redeem them. My children will probably tell you that we were almost a Jesus-free Christmas house. The day of Christmas, Jesus may not even come up. Sometimes it still feels weird to sing carols in the assembly. And they sure don't sound right in July, do they? But they could be sung any time, but they aren't. And I get nervous this time of year because sometimes I still don't want people to get the impression that I think that Jesus was born on December 25th. So sometimes they just don't ever get sung. Even though they're biblical and could be sung at any time of the year. And I don't want us to be that way, not a Jesus-free church, not on the day of December 25th or close to it. Or any other day. I believe it's wrong to not talk about Jesus, to purposely avoid the subject of Jesus. When the rest of the world is again at least thinking about Jesus, I'd like to help them think more and learn more about him. I want to promote Jesus at a time when the world is commercializing him. I'm not going to argue over dates of time with anyone. I want to help spend my time helping people understand why he was born. In the first place, now, I want to help people unwrap that amazing gift that they can see what the incarnation was really all about. And I certainly don't want to diminish anyone's upbringing. I'm not saying it's wrong to not allow those songs to be sung or to kind of avoid talking about the birth of Jesus during this season. But I do think that there's another way to look at it. Being a child of God, especially during this time of year, takes on a whole new meaning. Now, like I said last week, Jesus isn't the reason for the season. He's the reason for everything. Everything that you are, everything that you do. If we look back at Luke 2:15, it says, when the angels went away from them into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, let us go to Bethlehem and see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has made known to us. It wasn't enough for the shepherds to merely have just heard that Jesus was born. It wasn't like the angels told him and they gave him a thumbs up and said, that's pretty good news, and they went back to shepherding the sheep. They had to go see it for themselves. They had to be a part of it. This was a calling. The shepherds wanted to be part of what was taking place. For them, it was more than just an event. It was an experience. And I think that's what it should be for us as well. Without Jesus, not only would Christmas have no meaning, life would have no meaning. We have to see the birth of Christ as more than just an event. Like the shepherds, we have to go to him. We have to experience him. So this morning, what's your Christmas story? And I don't mean what's your Christmas traditions. I don't want to know when you open your presents or what kind of cookies you leave out. But what is your Christmas story? Because I think one of the things that often gets lost at this time of year is when we read the account of Jesus' birth, is what gets lost is that you are also a part of that story. Well, now, we can name the characters, Mary and Joseph and the innkeeper and the wise men and the shepherds, but when you think about the story, when you rehearse this story in your head, do you put yourself there? And again, if we look at John chapter 1, verse 12, he says, but to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. It says, to those who believe. And as Christians, that's us, that's you, that's me, that's anyone who believes in him, anyone at all, family name, gender, ethnicity, socioeconomic status, none of that means anything. The great drama of God who reveals his glory through a son is a play that is in search of actors, and there's a part for everyone, you and I included. Well, while this passage is often associated with this time of year and the advent of Christ, it's so much more than that. That this isn't just about the birth of Jesus. It's about the full meaning and magnitude of everything that he was, that he is, and that everything he will do. And we are a center of that story. Now, again, let me say, you are not the star of that story. God is. Jesus is. But you play a role, a huge role, because this was for you. You're the centerpiece because God did this for us. Again, we're not the star of the show, but we do play a pivotal role. God featured you from the very beginning. One last passage to look up. Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. There, God says, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female. He created them, and God blessed them. And God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish and sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth." Why would God create this life form that he calls humans? And the answer is simple, to have someone to love. God wanted a relationship with mankind, and that's what he got, at least in the beginning. But there's another reason God created mankind, and that was to be an image bearer. The Greeks call it eikon. We were created to be the visual representation and manifestation of the one who designed us, the one who made us. We were to be, again, the visible representation and manifestation of the Creator to the world around us. Back in 2012, Lance Armstrong lost 7 of his 10 sponsorships. In one day, he lost over $150 million. And the reason why was that he was found to have used an illegal substance, then lied about it, then may have threatened a few teammates to lie about it too, and then he got banned for life. The former 7-time Tour de France champion was out of cycling. Because people like Nike and Oakley didn't want to associate themselves with a cheater. They felt that it would hurt their bottom line. If someone saw Nike supporting someone who was convicted of these things, it wouldn't look good on them. Again, we were made to represent our Creator. God said, "Let's make man look like us." From the very beginning, the goal was for man to be a mirror. We were made, again, to be the visual representation and manifestation of the one who made us. Paul puts it this way in 1 Corinthians 15, that just as we have borne the image of the man of dust, we shall also bear the image of the man of heaven. However, though we were made to be a mirror, we messed it up, right? Now the mirror is more like a funhouse mirror. Maybe you've been to Ripley's Believe It or Not in Branson. They have a room that's full of mirrors that will distort your image. And that's the same thing that sin did. That's what man did when he fell. He caused the image to be distorted. And now we look like a bunch of funhouse mirrors, so to speak. But Jesus came to clear that image up. He came to make the image clear, to be the visual representation and manifestation of the unseen God. He came to show us what we are supposed to look like. Jesus is the standard. God would have been justified to pull his sponsorship from us, right? God would have been justified in saying, "Listen, you guys have just done too much wrong and you've caused me too much trouble. I'm going to distance myself from you. You made it really hard." He would have been totally justified to pull his sponsorship, saying, "You guys are not a good representation of me. It's starting to affect my bottom line." But God didn't do that. Instead, he found a way to bring us even closer. He found a way to redeem what we distorted. God became like us, became one of us, to restore us to the image in which we were created and to insert us into the story he has written. As we finish up this morning, close with just one more story. There's a story of a great king who was very popular amongst the people, but he wanted to see how his subjects lived. And so he removed his crown and robe and put on the clothes of a beggar. And he went to a lowly man's home, which was just a cellar. And he ate the man's spoiled food and wore his clothes that were tattered. The king went and lived with this man for some time. He encouraged this man. He tried to lift him up. And then he left, and sometime later he came back. This time he showed up wearing his robe and crown and had his attendants with him, and then the beggar invited him in. They sat and spoke, and the king fully expected the man to ask him for something, maybe money, food, something. And the king was prepared to give it to him. But that's not what the man did. Instead, the man said, You left your palace and glory to visit me in this dreary place. You ate my spoiled food that I eat. You brought gladness to my heart. To others you have given rich gifts, but to me you have given yourself. That's it, isn't it? That's our story. God has blessed us in unbelievable ways, but the most important thing he has done is that he's given himself. That's our story. He became one of us to save us. That's the headline in big bold letters, Emmanuel, God with us. That's the whole point to the story. It's not about presence, it's about presence. And are you in his presence? I read a quote this week that stuck with me, and I don't know that it'll ever leave me, but it said that every man is as close to God as he wants to be. Well, I want to be closer to God. Well, you're as close to God as you want to be, wherever you are right now. How close to God do you want to be? And if you're not as close as you want, don't leave here this morning the same way. Make sure that you're in his presence. Let us pray with you. Let us study with or encourage you if we can. Let us help you if you're ready to take that next step in faith and put Christ on in baptism and begin a daily walk with God. Whatever it needs to be for you to leave here today and be as close to God as possible, take care of that today. Don't miss the headline. Be part of that story as together we stand and we sing.